Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Red Men podcast. The season, is it technically underway? The Reds are back in training. The smiles on our faces. There was that football tournament.
Let's go!
The football tournament that was going on is no more. We'll talk a little bit about it interspersed throughout the podcast, of course, because it's quite big and all that. But yeah, largely we're going to be talking about Liverpool, the players that are back, the players are there over in Austria right now, the fixtures that Liverpool have announced that they will be playing, and what that could all mean for our lives in the coming weeks and months. We have got some kickoff questions that I have for my guests. As I'm Paul Mason, Chris Pajax here, and Jay Pearson is here in the studio as well. Hi, Jay.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, no problem.
Let's
at all.
Back together.
Yeah. The first kickoff question comes from W32, says, would you rather be half your height or twice your weight, Chris Pajak?
Well, I'm assuming, right, that if you're half my height, you know, I'm also not losing any weight. Uh-huh. So that wouldn't be great, which is basically just be a really short version of the other one.
Yeah. As far as scale goes, yeah. Scale isn't really changing as such yet.
Which made it an interesting decision to make. And then I just went, you know what? If I'm just looking stupid regardless, I may as well at least be better at hide and seek. So I'm going with the smaller one.
Nice. I don't know if that makes sense. Cool. But yeah, okay, cool. No, that's fine. So, yeah.
I also imagine that, like, I could join in the kids' game of, like, Frozen or something. I could be one of those little rock things.
Oh, yeah. Very good. You could do that cannonball thing that the kid in Hook does.
Always, mate. You know, I like to talk about that. As yeah. Glorious. I'm doing Score Lane Park.
Yeah, absolutely.
What a film.
Jay, half your height or twice your weight?
Well, I think I'm quite small anyway, mate, so I'll probably go with the weight.
Yeah.
I would, because I can probably lose that.
Yeah,
you know, I'd have an effort, you know, I'd just have an effort trying to lose it, but I can't grow anymore.
Yeah, I 3 foot. I know, I'm two is pretty short. It's pretty, you know,
it's not as short as, like, I don't know, 2.5.
No. Twice your weight. I'm still, but like, you're right. You're entering into the world of specialist things, like in both areas, well, really, yeah. You know, bigger beds,
yeah,
you might fill
a door frame, yeah, wouldn't be great.
Plenty of leg room on the plane,
but I can still reach things, which is obviously a major benefit in life.
That's true.
But then
you don't want to be really short, really fat, and have to carry a little stepladder around everywhere you went, do you?
It's true.
No. Consideration. Darren Seaton says, just to bring things right back to football, would people go, oh, fucking, what are they doing? Fucking non-football things again. Boring. It's pre-season. There'll be plenty of serious topics to follow. Darren Seaton at CT on Twitter says, would you have had Hendo on your first five pen takers? Even just from an experienced head POV. I have to start this, Chris, with the fact that I'm gutted because, look, if Hendo had a penalty and he'd scored it and England had won, then that'd be brilliant for Jordan Henderson. But also for my nerves, there was a little part of me when he was taken off was like, at least I don't have to deal with a world where if the worst happens, Jordan Henderson gets vilified by an entire nation. And we're going to come on and talk about some of that stuff that's happened off the back. But Hendo would have taken one. And I wonder whether, I saw a comment saying, maybe Southgate almost like protected him from himself because there's no way Jordan wouldn't have offered himself up for the five, but he's not great at penalties.
No, and I saw something where you look at the stats of how many actual penalties these lads have all taken. And, you know, Harry Kane far and above 40 plus penalties and stuff. I think Rashford was on 15. The rest are all single digits, lots of them lower than five. Doesn't include shootouts and stuff like that, but there wasn't, the squad wasn't full of penalty takers. Henderson's not a penalty taker really anyway. I have a lot of trust in Jordan, and I trust that he'd be able to get it over the line when it matters. The one he missed, obviously, a few weeks ago, friendly, different type of thing with the pressure of actually taking a penalty in the European final. I mean, it's madness, really, when you think about it. But I was the same as you, Paul. I didn't want him coming home because my first thoughts are all Liverpool, and that can have a hangover into the Premier League season. So for me, it was like, well, if he misses one and he starts his head in the wrong place for Liverpool, that's bad. Don't take one. And if I was England manager and also just happened, like in Football Manager, say, to be the Liverpool manager, and if Football Manager mattered that much where the mindset came in, I probably wouldn't have them taking a penalty.
But I said it's one of the reasons why I got a little bit, it took me a while to warm to it, but I was fine. I found myself more fine with it than I would have been because I didn't have so many Liverpool players involved, which normally buys me in better to the team as the tournament, but also there's that fear factor. You know, Christian, someone when Gerrard missed the penalty in 2006.
Oh, that's a story.
Because someone said Gerrard was to blame for England getting knocked out. These are all the added stresses and strains that come with it. It's easy to say now, isn't it, when you see that a teenage kid got left with the nation's weight on his entirely on his shoulders, that Jordan Henderson, I think, would be better placed to miss that. Because I think he'd be less arsed.
Absolutely, absolutely. Credit to Saka for having a go. Do you know what I mean? I think back what I was doing at 19, and there's no way that I had any of those pressures.
On this podcast,
absolutely not. It's not shareable on this podcast. But fair play to him. Fair play to anybody who steps up in that. You know what I mean? Yeah. So yeah, not to go on about too much because I agree with both of what you said. You know, the pressure of a Liverpool player missing is not something you want as a Liverpool supporter. But also as well, like you said, there is that little bit of relief. But again, I reckon if Hendo had took one, you know, he could have handled the pressure.
The one thing about it, and maybe it plays in his favour. Now, bearing in mind, he took one in the warm-up games and missed, so this doesn't necessarily buy into that. But Jordan strikes me as someone who just would have walked up and wellied it. And I think that was the way to score the penalties, passed on a rumour, whereas quite clearly he was prepared for everyone to take those really slow stutter run-ups, trying to wait for him to commit. Yeah. And he psychologically won the game, whereas I think Jordan just walks up and toes it into
a
corner.
There was something where a commentator said in one of the, I can't remember if it was the quarters or the semis, in one of the penalty shootouts, where a commentator said, why don't they just run up? Why did he walk up to the line? Like, that's when the pressure builds. Like, just pick the ball up and run to the penalty spot and just take it, because it's that walk, innit? Like, it's 30 seconds and it's madness. I was like, that's such a great point. Why don't people do that? Because that's when it gets into your head. That's when you start looking at how big Donnarumma is in the goal, and, you know, you see the keepers moving around and stuff like that. And it's just, that's when the pressure builds. Get up there, take the penalty. Jordan would have done that. I don't think he'd have ran up, because no one does that. But he'd have get up there. He wouldn't look at the goalkeeper. He'd pick a spot and he'd just swat it. And if the keeper saves it, the keeper saves it. Yeah. That's the way it is. As long as you hit a good penalty where you want to hit it, you can't do much more.
It's true that. I like the psychological thing that you both mentioned, because the best do it, you know, look at Ronaldo in the Champions League final for United. He did a stuttering run and he missed. And obviously, he went on to win the trophy anyway. But then you look at changing your mind. I think you're right. If Hendo, obviously, had missed in the friendly, he would have just wellied it, because look at Risa. Tries to place one in Istanbul, misses. A year later, he's up again in the FA Cup final.
No one told him Dieter only knew how to dive one way.
Exactly.
But this is.
But then he wellies it the following year, doesn't he? Puts it in the back of the net. He's like, I'm not making that mistake again. Yeah,
exactly, so. That's it. But the thing is, it's meant to be that stuttering run-up has become the go-to thing, because it works on goalies who themselves have to move earlier now because they've limited what goalies can do on the line, whereas I think they were given a bit more leeway, keepers, to move around. I don't know if they changed the mandate ahead of the tournament, but goalies were definitely more mobile in the run-up. And of course, I say Donnarumma's massive, so you've very much got it in your head that if I don't get this perfect, he's probably going to get something.
There's a
to
difference, isn't there? You know this, Paul, as an ex-goalkeeper. When you're that tall, you can reach the corners without having to go early. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that plays into it, whereas Pickford has to sort of move around. And they all did a great job of keeping their feet behind the line and on the line. They've all changed the technique. We spoke about this the other week. But when you're Donnarumma, you can go late, because only what something into the bottom corner is going to beat you. When you're Pickford, you're a little bit shorter. You have to go that little bit earlier. You have to dive forward. Yeah. He didn't have to do that.
The bottle from Donnarumma to just stand there and go quit.
Yeah.
What are you doing? I'm not going.
But look, here's the thing, right?
It's chicken.
You know, with obviously talking about it, one of the best penalty takers in the world, whether you like his technique or not, is Jorginho. He missed.
Yeah.
That was a great save.
And he's used to that pressure. Mm-hmm. So some of the best penalty takers, you know, Roberto Baggio going back years and years, one of the best penalty takers, one of the best players in the world at the time, missed the pressure. And it's not just the pressure. Sometimes you can just miss kick it. Mm-hmm. Like Rashford's penalty for me had a higher chance of missing than anyone else because he wasn't looking at the ball. Mm-hmm. But that's the way he takes penalties. Yeah. He's probably better than me if I was to not look at the ball because I've never kicked the ball without looking at it before. You know what I mean? And I'm like, eye on it, like trying to make sure it's there. Like, you know,
and there's someone who'd never changed gear without looking at his clutch pedal, which is funny. Like, dangerous way to drive that. It's again, it would have been nice to see Hendo take one because it would have been nice to see him take the plaudits. And as I say, ultimately, I think he's at that stage of his career. You can see how much he's prepared to put his name and his face to things that most people are scared to because they don't want to face the backlash. I think he probably could have handled than any negativity had he been the one who missed it, which is a shame because again it boils down to the manager, and the manager held his hand up.
Yes.
You know, and he said, you know, I picked the lads who were dead good at penalties in training. That's what I did. If it works, again, you look like a genius, and if it doesn't, you look stupid. But that's it.
The only time he'd be able to change that, because that's the obvious thing that you're going to do as the England manager. You're going to look at the ones who are doing it in training. Yeah, there's no pressure. So then what do you look at? Well, who's taking penalties in real life in big game situations? If you had five penalty takers in the squad who do it regularly, you'd go with them.
Of course.
Because they've got to. But when you don't, you've got to go with the ones who do it in training because there's no real world experience to draw from.
It's mad. Look how many centre-halves took penalties in that.
Maguire's was the best penalty of the lot.
Yeah.
Broke the camera.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Fantastic, wasn't it?
Perfect, yeah. The one limited credit, to find myself giving limited credit to Man United players, Harry Maguire's penalty was immense. Right, okay, we're going to get things back onto Liverpool track momentarily. But first, we have got an exclusive interview with Liverpool manager Jürgen Klopp streaming right now on the redmentv.com. There's going to be a big chunk of it going out this weekend for you guys on YouTube, but if you want the full thing, here's a little sneak peek right now. Chelsea Man City game, you guys go to Formby Hall. What are your sort of memories of that being arranged and that night itself, if you can actually remember anything from the night?
Yeah, I have quite, but on that night I have good memories. So we won our game, obviously, and every next day is could be a decisive day. And I really wanted it. It's so strange, and you don't know. Nobody plans a trophy celebration without anybody around. You don't know it. We are a bit superstitious. You don't say 4 weeks beforehand and we will do this and that and that. It's always kind of spontaneous, which is completely fine. So I decided that day, okay, tomorrow we go to Formby Hall. We book all the rooms again, which we had anyway most of the time because of when we played the games, we had to go there as well. Let's watch the first game. I forgot what was the first game, but it was the other game before that night, and then watch the Chelsea Man City game. And honestly, it's not my favorite way to become champion, but it was a good one. It was completely fine, to be honest. Much better than I would have expected. And it was absolutely great. So sitting there and it was clear now with the win the day before, it was clear we will be champion. So even I knew then it will happen, but we wanted it to happen now in this moment. And it was great. So it was really nail biting and stuff like this. And the goal and penalty, no goal and a penalty, red card and all these kind of things was involved. Absolutely outstanding night. And we made the best of it, to be honest. We made absolutely the best of it. It's a night I will never forget in my life, which I'm 53, I had a few nights, so it means, and I forgot most of them, so that means something.
Hey, welcome back. Yes, Jürgen Klopp is fully streaming right now on the redmentv.com. Go and sign up. We're talking about the life and times of Mr. Jordan Henderson. Some great insight into Liverpool's title celebrations and going all the way back to things like Barcelona, etc., etc. Really, really, really good stuff. It's part of our Jordan Henderson 10 Years of Red documentary series, which again, all episodes streaming right now on the platform. It's really, really good.
You can see that it's the real Jürgen Klopp as well, the one that wears glasses.
Yeah, not the fake impossible. I think he's done that just because of that guy, the impersonator walking around.
I hope that you can't afford laser eye surgery as well.
He's like, right, I'm having it done.
Well, he can't afford Liverpool tracky bottoms, I've noticed. he had some jag sports direct ones.
One with flashing them.
Yeah, definitely. Covered in beer from Wembley Way. Yes, these are there will be a bigger section of that coming out for free on YouTube. If you're undecided, then hang on for that, watch that, and then again, go and subscribe to theredmentv.com to watch the full thing. Right, yeah, let's dive into it then. The Liverpool squad is back in training. We're all made up to see Jürgen, laser eye surgery Jürgen, which is mad.
Anyone still Jürgen on the YouTube channel and see if there's any training videos? There's not. No. Really disappointing.
I'm sure there'll be the inside training video, which I always find.
What a lovely place to train
really
as well.
Really dull.
Stunning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stunning again.
Yeah, no, they
love much better than Kirby.
Much better than Kirby.
And windy.
Less windy. yeah, so of the squad that are out there, I won't read them. Everyone should know by now. You can check out Twitter account if you want to see the full names. But there are some really interesting ones in there as well. I just wonder, we had a bit of a chat about this last week without knowing the names, but is there anyone in there that you're particularly excited to see, Jay?
Oh, it's the obvious one, though. Our new number five. For obvious reasons, the fact that, you know, he looks stunning in that new away kit, by the way, just going to throw that out there, you know, there's the away kit plug I've just done. I'm just so excited to have him as part of the squad now, and the fact that, you know, Virgil hasn't been to the Euros, unfortunately for him, but now that they can get a really good understanding together, I think that's really important. That's not to say that Gomez or Matip isn't going to be the first choice as well. Mm-hmm. I just think from an embedding in period, that's fantastic. And I saw a lovely tweet yesterday about the size of all our centre halves and Fabinho and how tall they are. I'm like, oh, it's quite intimidating. So yeah, really excited for Canate.
Well, it was seeing the little Canate clip of Jürgen Klopp putting his arm around him, and he towers over Jürgen. He's just amazing. But that's a massive thing, isn't it? Because Paul Tompkins did a big thing about this last season about how one of the many reasons why we were a bit crap when we really struggled, we just lost all of our height. You're losing Virgil, you're losing Matip. Yeah. We became so aerially vulnerable, and it's like anything, you don't notice it when you've got it. You only notice it in its absence.
Yeah, the physicality is a big thing of what Klopp built into the side over the couple of years prior to us hitting our height, as it were, and that's massive, isn't it? You're 6'4", Canate. Obviously, we know how tall Virgil van Dijk is, Joel Matip as well. Fabinho in front of it makes it almost impossible to get the ball over the head. It shouldn't. I always say this, it really shouldn't. It's as much to do with the positioning as the height of the players. Fabinho's position is better than everybody else.
But if you've got positioning plus height.
Plus height, yeah, it's a hard thing to replicate, isn't it? You know, so for me, that's massive. The big one for me, though, is Virgil. And I said this a couple of weeks ago. It's how he comes back, because that's the most important piece of the puzzle for me. You know, I want to make sure that he's all right. He can get through this sort of pre-season.
Sorry. You missed me gavel. Okay,
I said to the lads,
trying to keep a straight face.
I said to the lads, going to try and use an invisible gavel at some point, like fucking Boris Johnson, the divvy does. And I did it at completely the wrong point, which actually perfectly replicates what Boris Johnson correct. Does yeah. with his gavel. So yeah,
you got his intonation right. That was good.
So fair, Joe.
With his gavel, right? Yeah, words in
half case
the string. Yeah, I'm looking at some of the extra bits and pieces. For me, right, it's going to be great to see Virgil. It's great to see the new signing always, because I've got no real sense of Canate, to be honest. So you know, I want to get that. But I like that. You know, we always talk about this every year. It's why Danny Pacheco's a joke. We all know what we mean when we say Danny Pacheco. And for those of you maybe a bit too young or too old or maybe whatever, Danny Pacheco is the notion of a young superstar with all our hopes pinned on him, who does really well in pre-season but doesn't quite make it. But it doesn't mean you can't not have those pre-seasons. We'll always have the pre-seasons, Danny. Yeah. Souza was a bit like that as well.
Christian Nemeth.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a bunch of them, and I look at some of those names there, and I think the good thing is a couple of them a bit younger, but Mateusz Mazlowski, Cade Gordon as well, obviously only joined in January from Derby. He's another one with very high hopes. There's been a lot of talk about Conor Bradley being able to step up as an understudy at right back as well. And Billy Cometti on the centre back thing, Jay, kind of gone off the radar. This time last year, we were talking about him being Liverpool's fourth choice centre half, and apart from a very brief cameo away in the latter stage of the Champions League last season, we didn't really get to see that. Be interested to know whether he should come along, or is he another
kind of like over your Jarier, where he looks like he's got it, and then you realise he's not kind of progressed behind the scenes.
Well, he's still here, which is always a good point. You know, there hasn't been anything.
Ben Woodburn's on this list as well, we're kidding.
Okay, I'll be quiet now.
Is he seventh or eighth choice?
Well, that's the question. Is he
ahead
not?
Of Ben Davies?
Well, that's that's why, is it seventh or eighth, I think, isn't it? Because you've got the four big lads that we know about. Then you've got Rhys Williams and Nat Phillips at the moment, five and six. And then it's Ben Davies and Cometio, isn't it, I suppose?
Mm. Yeah. Let's do the Ben Davies stuff, because if he doesn't play in these games, that's...
We just want to see number 28.
There's going to be a behind-closed-doors friendly that's not been announced, yeah. That's not on telly, and they're going to try and blag that he played, because we won't be able to prove otherwise.
Is this like when Romario tried to claim he'd scored them back 1,000 goals or something, and he was claiming, like, backyard finishes? Definitely, talking about something about Brazilian forwards.
There's another interesting one here in that sort of same vein for me, and that's Tsimikas, because we were looking at Burnley this morning about how many minutes everyone's played during the summer and stuff, and Robertson's, I think I'm right in saying he played 403 minutes. Now, he's going to have time off. Tsimikas is going to be in those friendlies. He's going to, you'd imagine, be the starting left back. We've not really seen that much of him. What can he give? Is he going to give us a sense that there's a player there that's going to be all right when dropped in?
In terms of fringe players in that squad, because look, Origi's there, I've mentioned Ben Woodburn's there, Rhys Williams is there. There's a couple of lads there who, like Naby Keita, maybe falls into this, and maybe a bit of Ox as well to some extent. But there's a difference between kids who are just there to make the numbers up and have the experience, and they'll become better for just being around the first team squad, great. You've got a couple of lads there who really, they're there until the transfer comes. Loris Karius being probably prime example of that, the most obvious example of that. But there's a couple of players who, and Tsimikas is probably one of the most senior of these, where if he has a good pre-season, he needs a good pre-season, because a good pre-season sets him up for the season. Harvey Elliott falls into that category in a slightly different way. But you might find, let's just focus on the Tsimikas stuff, you're right, Chris, that the plan was to rotate him in more last season, but that was just hampered by injury. But we don't know that. We had this conversation loads at the back end of last season. To most of our minds, we might as well just presume he's crap.
Yeah.
Because he probably is. Because it's very hard to be good enough to play for Liverpool. You know what I mean by crap.
As long as I hear Kostas FNL 2.0, I'm happy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, he does. He needs to have a good kickstart to his Liverpool career, really, doesn't he? And this is a perfect opportunity.
Don't know what he is. You know, the very, very brief glimpses, he looked like he had good forward thrust. He looked like a good attacking forward. He looked Robertson-ish. I got just enough glimpses to go, okay, I get what you've tried to buy here. I don't feel like this is a new Usama Asai detail style situation where you've just bought someone who plays a position, because I don't think we'd have gone through that negotiation period with Jamal Lewis and whatever last season if they didn't really want him, because they committed that money very early. That was our first signing, wasn't it, last summer?
Was it,
I'm just interested to see what he can do, and I hope he stays fit, because to your point, Chris, Robertson played more minutes than anyone, and he pretty much has done now for three seasons. We could really do with our other specialist fullback that we've bought.
And he should be up to speed. He should be, because he's been training for so long now that it shouldn't be a six-month adjustment period. We should get a real sense of who he is as a footballer by the end of pre-season. And with Robertson going on his break and his holiday, he's going to get two or three appearances easy before Robertson comes back. Yeah. He's going to get a pre-season under his belt, and he should be at the position where he's trying to put some pressure. I'm not saying he will put pressure on Robertson, but he's trying to put pressure on Robertson. He's trying to show Jürgen that I'm going to be here this season, and when you need me to, put me in the side, because Robertson's going to need a break. He needed a break at times last season. I don't know how he managed to get through, but you think back to that first 3 months of the period, everybody, every game was saying Robertson's our player of the year so far. Yeah. And that Christmas period, he was goosed, and he somehow managed to get his energy levels back up for the running, as a lot of the squad somehow managed to do. We need to be able to keep his level at 95, 100% Robertson throughout the year. If that means a game off now and again, that means a game off now and again. Yeah. I want to see him in all those early Champions League games if the draw lets us. I want to see him in all the cup games if the draw lets us. I want Robertson playing 45 to 50 max.
If Tsimikas is ready to go, then you're playing your first three games of the season. I'd have no problems with Tsimikas being involved in one of them, or certainly by the time the Champions League rolls around. You've got a big Champions League game in the week, and you've got a, you know, for now, you've got just an opponent. Or you're playing League Cup midweek and you're playing this. Yeah. Andy Robertson doesn't need to play in every competition at all times. I'm not sure that'll be enough for Tsimikas, because we saw this with, like, let's say Origi last season as an example. You do need minutes to stay sharp. You know, I think if we'd found another couple of games for Origi, that Burnley chance that he rattles off the bar and he's clean to do it, he probably just slots that. Mm. There's a bit of rustiness that comes with it, but I'm hope that's the hope, because I don't see the point of buying, spending £12 million on a backup fullback when you might as well have gotten someone who can do a couple, because you can't play anywhere else.
Yeah.
It's not like you're getting a centre back out of there. It's not like you're getting a defensive midfielder out of there. So no, he's definitely.
He wouldn't have made the bench as much last season if the rules were 7 subs still either.
Maybe.
Because Klopp always likes to have people, versatile players. And I think, like, you know, there were times when we'd have a left back, two centre backs, and a right back on the bench. You look back at Jürgen's squads prior to last season, that never ever happened. So he wouldn't have even been involved in match days for the most part, I don't think. Mm. I think Milner would have been the option at left back because he can play in midfield, yeah, should the game say to allow for it or something like that. So he's got to be there and he's got to be going. I want 15 appearances minimum this season. Mm. And if 15's enough to get me a move somewhere else or I enjoy it, then I'll stick around. But he's got to be looking at it and going, I've not played football. He didn't even have minutes. Like Liverpool weren't good enough to be able to just take Robertson off at times, yeah, last true season. Yeah. That's like, you can keep rhythm up by 20 minutes here, half an hour here and there if you get two goals up. If he's good enough to just slot in, we don't know. That's the problem. That's why I find him as one of the most interesting. Him and Harvey Elliott for me are probably the two most interesting players.
Well, the Tsimikas stuff is almost, in some regard, it's like a dull answer, but it's not, because you're right. And these are the diving deeper things on these, because he is effectively a noob signing, because but you know, to the point of Chris made, except he's one that's already integrated. He's got mates in the squad. Mm. He understands it. He's had time to acclimatise and all that kind of stuff. So if he can't thrive in these kind of situations, then we'll have a clearer idea. So thank you to Michael Pillay, who sent a super sticker in.
It was a good sticker. I liked it. I don't know what it was.
It's like someone shoving forward a cup or something. Well done.
Oh,
Definitely doesn't translate to audio podcast listeners.
Or blood, one of the two.
One other thing that's interesting about this, it may be slightly offset by the fact that Mane and Salah are in the pre-season squad, which never happens. Because we did like all the cliches last week of what normally happens in pre-season. And the one that I'd forgotten was how we get dead hyped up, but all the strikers are normally on international duty, so we're shit in front of goal for like 5 games and everyone's heads fall off because Liverpool can't win football matches. And then what normally happens is Salah and Firmino come back for like the last pre-season game and we batter someone. It was Leon a few seasons ago. Everyone was dead worried that they wouldn't be good, and then they came on. They had like a 15-minute cameo where they scored loads of goals and got off again. That will be offset this season, I think, a little bit. But there is no Firmino, and Jota's not going to be there as well. So, and obviously Harvey Elliott's there, but there's definitely a chance for someone here to get us a little bit more excited. I don't know whether it's going to be Teiwo, Awoniyi, nailed it. Possibly, maybe, probably not. or maybe it's it's another one of the kids or whatever. But I think there's a slot here, and maybe this goes back to the Pacheco thing.
Yeah,
for someone to get us quite excited. I mean, it probably is just Harvey Elliott, but you never know.
Absolutely, mate. And I think Harvey Elliott coming.
Sorry, Minamino, what am I doing? Totally forgot he existed.
You're laughing, right? Why can't he play the false nine with Salah and Mane? Yeah. And a little run of games.
Yeah, 100%.
Because he's not good enough is the answer.
He might be. We'll see. No, but actually, you know what? Scrap everything I've just said there, because he falls into the Tsimikas kind of camp in this. I know he's been at the club a bit half a season longer, but with no Bobby around now, that's a great point. He's there. He's training. If we see him as an understudy to Bobby Firmino, then he'll play these games as a nine for us. If we don't, then he'll probably play from the left and Mane might play through the middle, or we'll see Salah play through the middle, you know what I mean? And things kind of moved around. It's going to be interesting to see. And look, you can't make unequivocal statements on what you see in pre-season, because the first, particularly those mini games to start, it's just about getting lads out on the pitch in a relatively coherent formation. But if he's, I'd be interested to know whether Harvey Elliott's ahead of Minamino in the in his pecking order, and we might find a little.
I think
more
he will
that.
Be because I think the pecking order goes by position, and I think Harvey Elliott's number two on the right wing at the moment.
Yeah.
In the players in our squad, that probably maybe Mane, but I'd guess Harvey Elliott's there to put a stake down.
And his form as well. He was so good last year, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think. For me, you know, you got Firmino and number two in the nines, probably Salah or Jota,
yeah.
something like that, and yeah. you move somebody else around. But that being said, Minamino, and I was kind of half joking before, he hasn't had that run with the two lads either side of him, and it's very rare you do. Mm-hmm. You know, you're never going to get that during a season when Firmino's available. He's going to play in the nine. You're not going to give Minamino three or four halves of football with the two good lads. And he might not this pre-season and that, and you're right, that will tell us where we are. But if we can see Minamino putting some kind of performance together from the middle, then you don't need to sign him. You genuinely don't. And people might laugh at that because, look, we all think he wasn't good enough. He wasn't. But we also remember the player that we came up against who was fucking brilliant yeah. and he was playing full of confidence in the team that he knew how they played and he was part of it, a beating heartbeat from that side. If he can become something like that, we don't need to sign someone.
I can only think of one really bad Minamino performance, and it was the, I can't remember the team was, the Midgetland performance at Anfield, and he was atrocious. But then again, Liverpool were utterly yeah. atrocious in that game. By and large, he's always been okay. You know, he's always looked... enough
was
again.
The Palace game like his last one,
yeah. when he scored he
yeah,
scored
it was brilliant.
It was fantastic, it really was. And yeah. I think I love the fact that we've got such a fantastic forward line. I really do. I do think you know, maybe another addition would be fantastic to add to that depth. But you know, to what Chris said, though, Minamino's been out on loan, he's had a bit more experience where he's played a lot more games, had a lot more minutes under his belt. And it might be just a new lease of life for him. He's going to come back and be like, do you know what? I'm going to put my marker down on this squad. But the Harvey Elliott situation just takes it a different direction because he was so good last year. And that kid's under so much pressure this yeah. year.
Well, the thing is, Minamino's not so far down the line that it's like, because what's the other cliche that happens in pre-season, which you've not mentioned, is a player who's got no chance of establishing himself has a really good pre-season.
Yeah.
Like, so Ben Woodburn to score a couple of worldies and you go, whoa, it's not even worth the effort. And I don't mean to be sly on Ben Woodburn because I think he's a very talented lad, but he's a yard short of pace. He's 2 or 3 inches short of height, and again, and you need to be magic if you don't have those things.
Feel his pain, to be honest.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, he's loved the keeper at Anfield Road from the edge of the area. What are you on about?
Yeah,
you smashed it, lad.
Yeah, it's true. I don't remember. I was really, really hungover.
But
anyway,
but maybe I suppose my point.
They have video evidence of it.
Yeah, it's not very good. But the point is, like, if Origi turns up in this preseason, it's like. I get it.
Yeah.
For the added transfer value, great. But it is what we're looking for. You know, if Minamino has a good pre-season, it could still mean
he's
going to have a good season.
Right,
off the back.
There are lads in this squad who we know where the ceiling is. Minamino isn't one of them.
Yeah.
For me.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's Amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I know how good Divock Origi can be, and I don't think he's good enough. I don't know how good Minamino can be. That's the difference when you look at those two players.
Yeah. It's true. It's the fear as well. You start seeing Origi getting more minutes and more games. You're thinking, oh my God, is Klopp actually thinking of using him more in different systems? And that's where the dread comes, doesn't it? Because you think, I think Divock's time's done now.
Yeah.
And we, you know, I think love him for what he's done
a year ago, to be honest, wasn't it? We're waiting on a bid. Now, there was a rumour about an £11 million bid for him, which we haven't had more on, but we'll be discussing on the Reds Transfer Roundup show tomorrow, streaming on the redmentv.com. So if you want more discussion around the transfer stuff, get involved. We've skirted around the fixtures, may as well talk through them. Tuesday, July 20th, it all kicks off with two 30-minute mini-games. FC Wacker Innsbruck at 5 p.m. UK time, followed by VfB Stuttgart at 5:45. They're behind closed doors, but they will be televised. Is this the sponsored podcast where we can say where that is, Chris? Or is that coming next week? Do we know?
I don't know.
Right, so let's leave it. If it's a sponsor, the sponsor will have been played on the podcast. So yeah, you'll know all about that. If it's not, let's not touch upon it because we're not getting paid to do that. They could do that if they really wanted to. We joked about this before. They've got Liverpool going full YouTube football here, Chris.
Yeah.
I'm all in on this. I'm actually I'm weirdly excited by it. It's like two matches for the price of one.
And it will be two separate teams, won't it? And I almost don't understand why they've put a 15-minute break in. Yeah. They may as well just come off and put the other team
maybe
on.
Maybe they're wearing, they've only got like 11 shirts.
Well, there's a new kit, man. So we might not, course, they're just getting up to speed, aren't they? Two match days for the price of one.
Game. It's like flooding a new pit crew.
Listen, whenever Liverpool are playing a team that you've never heard of, and for me that's Wacker Innsbruck, I'm expecting a big victory. But it's also the first pre-season game and it's only 30 minutes long. Yeah. So only 4-0 to Liverpool.
Just the four.
But if we get beat, it's going to be like...
Is it a pub team?
No.
Did it start life as a pub team?
I have no idea. I mean,
Google it. Let us know.
And we've literally got machines that can do that in front of us, but we're not going to. I've heard of Wacken as well. I couldn't tell you where they're from. Are they Austrian? I don't know. Who cares? This next game is against Mainz, Klopp's former team, of course, at the Grasbergers Betten Arena in Grodzik, with a 3,500 capacity, which is good to see.
He says it with confidence. He could be completely
very
wrong.
Confident where you did that,
but
then.
He sounds right. Yeah. It's something he's been very good at for years.
I've just made that up. I've not even made that.
Just said it with confidence.
And then Hertha Berlin at the Tivoli Stadium in Innsbruck. So clearly Innsbruck is we're pulling in all the Innsbruck teams at this point. That'll have a 15,000 capacity, which is pretty cool. That's on the 29th. Yeah, the Friday before is the Mainz game, which is cool. They're a bit more what we're kind of used to. Now, there's rumours that there'll be one more away and maybe two to come at Anfield. But I'm just a top line on this, Jay. I'm just glad they've done this because it was great seeing the lads come back. It was seeing the Liverpool social media team putting a picture of Mo Salah out basically during the Euro final. Yeah. So the second that was finished, I instantly had pre-season photos to look at and was I was saying I'm quite ready for it all. And now that we know the teams, it's something to get excited about. It's back, but not back in such a big way that we have to stress about it. Not that people won't stress about it, because they will, because people love to stress about anything. Yeah. But it is. It makes it real. It makes it exciting.
It does, actually. It makes it real. You know, seeing the lads get on the plane and the new training kit and stuff like that, you're like, yeah, now's the time. But it is exciting, and nothing screams 2021 football than two 30-minute games, doesn't it? That is... Definitely the new generation of footy, that. But yeah, it's great. The fixtures are out. I think I like the way they're building up as well in terms of level of opponent as well. It's very clever the way they're doing that as well. So yeah, just excited to see. You know, it's always the way, isn't it? You want to see the new kit on the pitch. You want to see the new signings. And, you know, don't want anyone to get too het up about what happens in these games. That's my fear.
They will. And I've said this for a long time. The problem we've had for years with this, Chris, because we used to go back in the day before
seeing
you
them,
get them.
It's seeing them is a problem.
Yeah, before the rise of the internet, you'd find a pub that had a dodgy satellite, and you'd have to beg the landlord to try and search through all the channels to find it. And you'd find it. And you're like, yeah, and we were just going the five ways and watching it on a tiny 12-inch telly up above the bar. 20 minutes in, you're just having a chat and talking. You know, you're not really watching the game because you realise they don't really matter. But I've said now, because there are people who consume these games in exactly the same way as they consume normal football matches, it's hard to disassociate the fact that it's not a competitive game, that these lads have done double sessions beforehand, so they're not sharp and you're not seeing what you expect. So pre-season is inevitably about trying to find glimpses of good stuff,
yeah.
But never something you should never be asked to get too angry. Or, no,
and this is where that 30-minute game comes in for me. I think it's really clever, and I wonder whether Liverpool are going to keep that moving forwards, because we know about the double sessions that go into games, and we know, I think, that at this stage of pre-season, they probably want 30 minutes is probably where they're at. They don't, you know, they play the 45, but the energy levels drop after 30 anyway, and then the second team comes in and it's even shitter quite often, because you've started at fucking 2-0 or 1-0 or something, whereas you're giving the second team a reason to go out. It's a new game against a new team and you get to stamp your authority on it. So I'd always imagine it'd be much harder to come in when you're the 11 lads who come on for the second half when the game could be over already.
Yeah.
It's about fitness, and we're telling you it's about fitness by saying the first half doesn't matter. It's not even the same team anymore.
Yeah.
Go out there and do what you need to do for 30 minutes and do the best for your body only. Yeah. And nothing else matters.
Yeah. I'd be interested to know whether how they approach it, whether they go, they split the talent, so Mane starts one and Salah starts the other game, as it were, or do you have as close to your strong team and then you put a team of complete kids out for another one, or vice versa?
Looking at the two sides, Stuttgart are a better side than the others.
I'm going to find out where about Wacker Innsbruck.
They're from Austria. They're an Austrian Association Football Club from Innsbruck. The club was formed in June 2002 as FC Wacker Tirol. Well,
second division Austrian team.
Etzal Ulhassan googled it, but didn't tell me the league. Thank you.
Second division Austrian team. Cool. So you're right. So yeah, you're
talking. So what's the point of playing Salah and Mane against them?
Yeah.
No, it's true. And when you can look at, let's look at the NHL for an example. They have the full squad out for every game and they have different lines. You know, you have your strongest line to start the game and then you put your second line on that.
I didn't think it'd get worse than Chris talking about NFL on this fucking podcast, but you've done it, Jay. Carry on.
Sorry. God, I'm gonna crack on now. But yeah, do you know what I'm saying? You could start one 30-minute game with your first choice and then you mix it up a little bit and see what that line can do. Do you know what I mean?
There's a chance there'll be subs within. I'm only messed. There's a chance that there'll be changes within those 30 minutes as well. You know what I mean? So it's not like it will necessarily be because there's 30-odd lads who've got on it as well.
Yeah.
Where it depends how many of them they want to use. There's a lot of players to try and get up to speed if you want to. But no, it's exciting, very exciting stuff indeed. And we will be doing watch-alongs for pre-season. So if you're wondering what we're going to be doing, we will be here. We will be hopefully it will be a little bit of combination between.
Sorry, Igzalo says, what the fuck is an NHL?
Sorry, mate.
It's a hospital delivery service, I think.
Sorry, mate.
Yeah,
what a great comment.
Once again, thanks very much to Michael Pillay, who keeps sending us cups of coffee, which is great. Good.
Thank
you so much. They're amazing. If anyone got any questions for us, they want to get in, please do, and we'll get a couple of them at the end of the pod. But yes, we'll be doing watch-alongs. There'll be a sort of a combination between the podcast and the watch-alongs we were doing last season as we try a couple of new things out for the pre-season ahead of the new campaign. So do join us. I've no idea when they are. On Tuesday the 20th, for the two mini games, will be from just before 5 p.m. on Tuesday, 5 p.m. on Friday the 23rd, and then 7 p.m. on Thursday the 29th. So yeah, make sure you subscribe to the channel and we hope to see you there. Lastly, before we wrap up, Chris, I know we had a brief chat about this, and we were talking about this in the office yesterday about how obviously you've had the fallout from the Euros, and there's plenty of people, and I don't want this to be about England per se. My there's lots of people who are happy that England didn't win. And there are a lot of people who are unhappy that England didn't win, and that's fine. People can have their reasons behind it. The thing that's most and that's worst about it all is that there's this notion that racists win regardless. So if England win, then racists get to be happy, and if England lose, then racists get to be overtly racist and find people to target and abuse. And that's the biggest fallout of all this for me is that the weird thing. It was just because we know what social media is like and we know what the world's like. It's horrendous that you're watching those lads taking the penalty. You're watching your Sterlings and your Sanchos and your Sakas and you're thinking, this is just it's inevitable and it's horrible to me that you see Marcus Rashford's mural being graffitied in Manchester, abuse being sent. It's just horrendous. We got to see all of the. If you hate England, most of the reason people hate England is because of the people who associate themselves with England, and there was never more prevalent cases of that in the build-up to that game. And after, if you're ever looking for clear evidence of why people might be turned off by the whole England thing, then it's the people who've had free reign over the last couple of days.
Sick yesterday reading all that stuff. It's the first time I've been on Twitter for about a week or so. And it was just, I had people texting me and showing me pictures of some of the stuff, and I couldn't believe it, to be honest with you. And yet I remember sitting here probably 4 weeks ago going, I don't know why I don't really like England, because I support all the other English teams and all that type of stuff. And then it was brought home after the final, exactly why. Because that George Cross means something different when I look at it. It means all the stuff that we saw yesterday. It means that horrendous racism and, you know, this just like... just a big gang of gammons. That's what I see when I see that George's Cross. And you shouldn't, because ultimately I am English. Like, I'm from Liverpool. I am English. Like, I was born in England, and I have no association with the country or those people. And I feel sorry for the genuine England fans as well.
Yeah.
Because I've been there. I've been a Liverpool fan that goes the game, that's been tainted with a brush by people from all around the country. And I know so many lads who are genuine England fans who that is just as disgusting too,
yeah,
as everybody else. But the minority, and it's not a small minority either, by the way. And I'm fed up with people saying, you know, 99.9%, it didn't seem like that. Like, you know what I mean? It really didn't. And there's people there that will have gone down to the ground before the game and broke in. Like, what a horrendously organised final. Do you remember going to Baal? And there was an exclusion zone a mile outside before the Europa League final where you couldn't get into if you didn't have a ticket. They were getting to the turnstiles. And there's lads from all over the country who've just decided to descend on that.
Yeah.
And they've drank all day long. And then they've just been in a fucking terrible, terrible state by the end of it.
I've been to three European finals in the last 6 years. And every single one of them, you've got to get through checkpoints to get even remotely near the stadium. Now, of course, Wembley's not set up like that. They want people in the pubs and bars around that, because it's part of the economy of Wembley, of course, and it's meant to be part of the experience. We have to be careful, because I know what you're saying with that point. It's that the problem with England is that all the mega knobheads from every football team in the country all gang together to form one massive gang of super ultra knobheads, and that's the problem. So you've got more people and all the bandwagon jumpers and all the people who aren't arsed are just looking to blow off steam and get ludicrously out of control and all that. The problem is, where we have to be careful is in that perception, because you're right, there's a ton of people who've gone there, who just went there and had a good experience, a relatively good experience, football notwithstanding, who went and it was a once in a lifetime thing, and they support the team and they love the football. I mean, I think about the Liverpool Man City coach greeting from an outside looking in. I wasn't there. I was there, but people who weren't there were going, they heard reports on the bottle being thrown. So everyone there was tarred with this. Liverpool fans have attacked the Man City bus.
Yeah.
That wasn't my experience of it. Mine was nothing but one of the most positive experiences, the thing I'd experienced in my life leading up to that. The fella who chucks the guy in the fountain in Barcelona, and it's Liverpool fans this.
Yeah.
So we do have to be careful, but to your point, Chris, which is where I think you're spot on, is that the volume of people there, and again, people charging barricades and all that kind of stuff, it went too far. There's loads of them stories. You speak to anyone who worked on the turnstiles of the Millennium Stadium. I remember speaking to someone, and she's got a very low opinion of Liverpool fans because she happened to work at Liverpool turnstile in the early 2000s when we were there a lot, and she was getting all kinds of stuff, you know, bad experiences because of people who are committed to bunking in, and they've got no choice at that point because they've made that decision. But that was happening en masse at the weekend, and that's the thing. It's a fucking crying shame, because we do ourselves as a country no favours.
Yeah.
That's... We're left to self-police, which is the problem with football. And everyone goes, look at football. Football's really bad. Football's really terrible. And this is not to excuse this behaviour, by the way, but it leads into the racism thing. The final should have been better policed. And post this, it's drawn to attention. I know you've shared this petition for people to sign up, you know, to need photo ID to sign up to social media platforms. Post this. This is social media platforms need to get a grip on this. People shouldn't have to, we shouldn't have to self-police. We shouldn't have to lead to these, like, people putting together threads of people and tagging their work in and all that kind of stuff. It should be an automated process. Someone should be getting paid to do this stuff. It's highlighted what a shit show the whole situation is.
It is, and it's a very thin version of the purge. I feel that's where we're at right now, and it's absolutely frightening. And you said there about self-policing. You know, we've all seen the videos of inside the ground where people were, you know, fans who had tickets were stopping other fans from coming in because obviously they were really, really overwhelmed, and that shouldn't be happening. And it's just so disappointing. We should be celebrating a football team that's got to a major final for the first time in 55 years, and unfortunately we're not. You know, we make no thinking about supporting England massively. I'm like with Chris, I've got lots of friends who were so behind this tournament, and I was towards the end where I was thinking, do you know what? I wasn't jumping on the bandwagon. It was a case of, well, do you know what? This is really good for our country, especially what's been going on over the last, you know, best part of 2 years now. It was so upsetting to see. And, you know, I would have loved England to win it. Of course I would have. But it's just, we're still talking about negativity after a tournament, which should have been hugely positive. But like when Euro 96 was so positive, even though we got through to the semis and we didn't win it, it was still so positive after it. You know what I mean? Everyone loved that tournament.
Yeah.
And people still love it to this day. And it's just a crying shame. But you're right, something needs to be done.
It's mad to me that the game could have gone on at 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah, that was
when
weird,
Liverpool
it?
Man United or Liverpool Everton is put on at 12:45 for all the reasons that we saw.
Yeah. Really good point.
In the European Cup final.
Yeah.
just ridiculous.
No, I'm not saying 12 o'clock. But again,
You are right. But again, I go back to that fan park in Basel, and there was that one fella who was so blind drunk, he was having beer pull. There's no way he went to the match. There's just no way he went to the match. There's no way he was in a condition. So you get that. But again, it's about, because again, it becomes about this idea that football fans can't be trusted, and there's obviously a certain degree of certain people who obviously can't, but again, it boils down to the fucking police. You shouldn't be allowed, it should just be fucking blindingly obvious. If you didn't have a ticket, you shouldn't have been able to get within spitting distance of Wembley. So even if you get a situation where you're going to tear down a barricade, well, there's a bunch of riot fans there, you're just running towards lockup.
Yeah.
And that clearly, there was clearly not enough being done there, and then they're leaving it on a bunch of like minimum wage paid part-time, zero-hour contracted stewards.
Yeah.
And my father-in-law does that at Goodison Park. He's just an old fella who just goes because he gets to watch some games of footy and gets a few quid in his pocket to boost his pension or whatever. Like, not because he doesn't want to be more cop. Yeah. You know what I mean? Doesn't want to be, you know, John McClane saving the day inside a situation. It's a fucking disgrace. And again, the things that we've seen afterwards, you're dead right, Jay. It's just, because again, the game was finished and it was late, and my kids stayed up. We actually had a fucking good experience. My kids, first time I've actually been able to share a football experience with my children, and then be into it, which was lovely. But as soon as the game was over, I was done with it. But I'm not done with it because I now can't go near social media for the days after because it's so upsetting and it's so depressing because, as you say, Chris, it's just horrible. Because you see, I'm seeing nice outpouring support, and that's great. And it should just be that. It should just be wall to wall, well in, lads, you gave it your all. But instead, a lot of the people who would normally be spreading positivity are having to divert their energies towards having to castigate and having to track down and hunt down knobheads. And that's why, again, I just put to Ben Kelly, who's had a great time watching this tournament, but he's done. It's ruined the whole experience for him. And it goes back to the point, I don't want knobheads to have nice things. But why do we have to be in a world where nice people can't have nice things because of knobheads?
It's a good point, mate. And this is the thing. I shared that petition, didn't I, about the social media thing, because it's something that's affected me. It's something that affects all of us who do these types of things where you just get abuse online from these accounts. Now, I've got to a point where I know how to deal with it now, and it took a long time to get there.
Yeah.
And I had my eyes opened actually by someone on Twitter that said, look, you know, it's an outlet for some people. Let's say you're not out to your parents or something like that, and you've built up a community of people and you don't want to have to sort of put your name to that account. I understand all that, and I really respect that side of things. But for me, the Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all of these social media platforms need to do more. They need to do more first and foremost. But if they could give me the option of just, like, instead of going private,
seeing verified people or not,
I'd do that. Because why wouldn't you? Because I can go, anyone can see my tweets if they're verified. I would tick that box tomorrow.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I feel a lot of people would be with me there. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that everyone who has a social media has to verify themselves. But if every platform just said, I'll tick a box and only people can see my yeah. tweet or talk to me who are verified, what a nicer place that would be.
The problem with doing this after the fact of anything is that it's going to cut off people. And the problem is, of course, is we now live in a world where
you've got to solve the biggest problem.
Yeah.
And the biggest problem is abuse online.
Yeah.
So you can't solve every problem with one thing. You just can't. In any walk of life, that doesn't exist. So solve the fucking biggest one. And then when that's sorted, solve the next one and the next one and the next one and see where you are. Yeah. The biggest problem with social media is abuse online by far and away.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, you know, there comes a point where you start with the big boys. That doesn't mean that people who, to your example, there's nothing to stop forums and there's nothing to stop smaller and independent things cropping up and taking those places for people to be able to maintain anonymity and have private conversations. But again, there's a degree of gating to all those things where it's just you want to keep knobheads out. And it's actually easy to do that in some smaller groups because they can be managed by individuals or small communities. But no, I agree on this. And it's the problem with all of this. It's like everything. It goes back to that thing of the good hardworking people are always getting punished because instead of finding sensible ways to approach things, things just get made more expensive or things get made harder. People are told to self-police. Let's use alcohol as an example of this. We can say, well, everyone got absolutely fucking bladdered and fucking all the people who were bladdered ruined that. Well, let's ban alcohol. Well, hang on, what about the people who just want a casual drink and don't get blind drunk and don't cause problems? What about them? And that's the kind of mad situation we're ending in now, where we're going to end up with no fans being allowed at football matches because of these kind of situations, because that's what they'll do. Because people will look at those pictures and remember that. That will be their take-homes. It won't be the video of Jack Grealish sharing a shirt with the kid after full-time. Yeah. He had his life made. Mm. The little girl getting a shirt off Mason Mount and that look on her face. They're all the brilliant things that came with this. You know, that story that Jordan Henderson shared about the lad who was openly gay, who came out, went to a game in makeup and had no problems.
Yeah, first time ever. Yeah.
And there's so many great stories that came out of the Euros, and this shouldn't be the central focus, but it also, again, it's because again, it's on us. We should be able, people should be happy. People should be able to revel in what the positives that came from that tournament instead of getting lost in this archaic, like someone did something bad, so they're the worst. Like they're a bad guy. The people are. You know what I mean?
This is a classic example. Purple in the comments says, abuse online is not a problem. Just delete Twitter. It's full of idiots. No, why should you have to delete it when you're being abused by somebody else? Yeah. Why should you have to do anything? They should be the one who's not allowed to use it. No. It's that simple. It's that is looking at it the complete wrong way.
No, exactly. It's like, you know, you go to a bar and that bar gets taken over by knobheads. Why should you have to go move to another local? No, that bar should be better run. There should be better, you know, more stringent on how people do and don't get in. Now, the problem is, and my God, this is heavy for a Liverpool podcast on a fucking Tuesday morning, by the way. But of course, we're now in that ultra woke, you know, lefties have got to find. And I'm considering myself broadly left leaning, but everything is fascism. Everything is fascism. So you end up with a world where if you ever to a world where you're excluding fascists is now being held up as a fascist act, which is mad. And this is why everything's a fucking mire. But you could start with just making sure that life is a little bit easier for good people.
Yeah.
And a little bit harder for not good people. Now I know that's difficult, but that shouldn't be on us to deal with that. We've all got our own hard lives to learn. My biggest thing about this, and we were having this conversation in the office yesterday. It's those good people I feel dead sorry for. And it's the fact that, like, again, all these people who support England who are now upset because their team didn't win, would have had something to celebrate, and we don't want to create that world. But I just think about the positive, that what we've lost there is a real chance of positivity and unity that was missed out on. I think it's being overlooked in a little bit of tribalism and I hate England or either England good or England bad. Is that, imagine if someone like Saka had scored the winning penalty, and we've lost that chance. Yeah. And we can claw it back in a this wave outpouring of support, but it's loads more hard work to be able to hold up positive role models. We're having to do it in the face of negativity as opposed to just being a pure positive thing. And loads of maybe people who are on the verge of being radicalized and being taken down a path, a younger generation who don't know, but they're being influenced by older people or people that they hold in high regard, are missing a chance. Because now all of a sudden, those people who like the parents and the grandparents who are spewing bile in their faces and infecting them with stuff, have now got these, holding these lads up as something, as a figure of hate, instead of them going, oh, but I really want to love this guy because he's just scored the penalty that's won me a game of football. It gave me all that joy.
I wish you were right, and I wish that would be what would happen, but it would just be a house built on sand. It would just be waiting for the next time, and that's the problem. So at least we've seen these societal issues more openly than we've seen in a long time. So at least you get a chance at fixing it rather than kicking it down the curb. In a utopian society, that would happen. Yeah.
But the thing is, it's got to happen. The good people need a win at some point.
True.
Like,
I agree.
They need, in this country, it's been going down the fucking pan for too long, and it goes all the way back to Brexit and beyond. Mm. Like, people need something just to, because again, we talk about this, like the commenters are saying, like, oh, it's been a hard 18 months. It's been a hard 18 months for everyone on the planet, but it feels, and you know, why can't this country get to have something nice for a change? Wouldn't it be nice if something just went our way for a while, where you get to just focus on the positives and you don't have to? And I'm not saying this is not about fixing wider issues. Sometimes it's good to just lead by example. Sometimes it's good to have it, here you go, here's good people doing good things, and show that rather than everything just be fucking horrible.
Well, that's it. How can you have a go at Marcus Rashford given what he's just done for the country? Exactly. I just don't get it.
And because you're a racist. That's why. Well,
and people who are hiding behind a false name on Twitter and a false photograph because they know they can get away with it. Now, when it comes to the petition thing, I know there's a bit of a divide on it in terms of, it is a very good thing, but then, like you said before, I'm absolutely spot on, Chris, people who are not comfortable to be out and all that sort of, that's absolutely fine. They have that right to be private. But I mean, if there's something you could do behind the scenes where you give your ID, but you can still stay like that, because eventually the people who do give their ID behind the scenes and are still hiding and giving abuse, eventually they'll get found out. So that could be where, I mean, it'll take a lot longer doing it that way, but the good people will be protected.
Well, it's what it is. It's tough because, again, it all sounds like a 1984 style world start asking for people's things. And there are risks associated with it, but also, again, technology moves faster than society, and we're trying to put the fucking, we're trying to put it back in the box when it's already out there.
The people who invented these things didn't expect this to be from
not.
You know, and that's everyone makes mistakes, even the people who invent all these mad things. One of the things that, and I find myself very much in this camp, like, I was a bit surprised that Henderson kept the silver medal on, right, but all the other players threw it off. And for me, as a Liverpool fan, I don't celebrate finishing second in a competition.
Phillips did as well, didn't he?
But I actually felt, for the first time, I thought about it after the final, and I thought about the Olympics, and I thought about what a bronze medal means to somebody in the Olympic Games or a silver medal. And I just wonder if that's a really small part of the problem, is that
entitlement.
It's fucking, people think it's shit finishing second. It's literally the best they've ever done in Euros.
I felt like saying,
ever.
That game was bigger than, if people go, it's the biggest game for 55 years. Nonsense. Football is much bigger than it was in the 60s by fucking miles. That game, even though it's a lesser tournament, was a much bigger, much more important and all that kind of thing game. To your Olympic medals thing, you know, you're maybe going even if it's just in the finals against what, like 100 meter sprint against what, six other people,
seven
other people, you know, in the order, there's 26 members of 22 other squads who'd all be made up with something, you know what I mean, out of that tournament. England getting to the final, I know it's like we've got this because we're born on this, like, first is everywhere, second is nowhere. But when you never get to finals, getting to a final's actually the experience of it all. Mm. I got loads more out of going to that Europa League final and going to that Champions League final in Kiev than you meant to. because it was the experience, it was the ride, yeah. It was the journey. You can't take all the other bits away from me. I was buzzing that I got to go to a Champions League final. I was well more buzzing than when I went a year later and we fucking won it, don't get me wrong.
But didn't it make it 10 times sweeter?
Yeah, exactly. But also, again, I don't go, oh, well, I don't think about Kiev anymore. I think about Kiev all the time. I think about the games that we played on the way. And again, it shows Jordan Henderson, again, it's a level of maturity, and it's not like
you get,
doing it because it's cool.
It's like the Olympics. It's every 4 years. You get about three, maybe four attempts at winning one of these or doing well in one of these tournaments. They don't come around all the time. Like, you know, it should probably be thought of in a slightly different way. And I wonder whether, if it was thought of in a different way, would you have those scenes afterwards? Because if second's good and not bad, would you have abuse afterwards?
Yeah, exactly. Calvin Phillips was good as well, wasn't he? He kept on and gave it a little kiss. Now, is he kissing it like, you know, I really appreciate how I've got to this level so quickly in my career. You know, this is a kiss for luck to see what happens next year with Leeds or what, you know, it's... I looked at
loads of those players and thought, that might be the only thing that he's win.
Yeah,
100%. Genuinely, like Pickford.
Yeah.
It might genuinely be the only thing he ever wins.
Yeah.
He stays at Evan.
It's closest thing. Yeah, I don't know, but...
I bet he was dead proud.
But he felt
the need to take it off because of peer pressure.
Yeah, probably, because people overthink these things, don't they? And you're right, it's stupid. But again, it goes back to the Jordan Henderson point, as he's at that stage in his career. Gerrard never quite got to that. I always think about this, he never got to the point where he was confident to just fully be himself and swing his personality around. You see it now as Rangers manager, he's all over it, he's amazing for it.
Yeah.
Jordan Henderson doesn't have that. Henderson is Jordan Henderson, and I like the fact that he's not asked. He wouldn't be thinking about what people think about that. And I'm sure there'll be people going, what's he doing with the second place medal? It helps. And positive, this goes back to the point, positive role models is more what we need. We need more people to go. Like Jürgen Klopp's been here for Liverpool. Our fan base at times was just a bit embarrassing. You know, how we behaved in the cop and at Anfield at times, just a bit like, you know, with a city that's often too cool to clap. But when a fella comes round and he's like that, and every given moment's like, oh, yeah, go ahead, it's quite good fun, this, isn't it? You need people to demonstrate positive behaviour, to demonstrate that you're allowed to have fun, that you're allowed to enjoy the small moments in life. Not everything has to be absolutely, it's not all or nothing.
Yeah.
On the subject of which, Arsenal, by the way, the new All or Nothing series.
Oh, yeah, it's coming out like, is it autumn 2022 or something
that's gonna
like that
be,
before the next season?
That's going to be unreal. Just before we wrap up, Scott Hawkes.
Wait, there, who's their manager?
Who cares? Won't be in by the time it's over. Scott Hawkes, $25 super chat. Thank you so much, Scott. I consider myself a genuine England fan, but years of being surrounded by no surrender knuckle draggers just made it embarrassing to the point of falling out of love with the whole thing. I think most people feel like that, to be honest, particularly in Liverpool. What I found was quite funny, people talk about how many fireworks got set off at full time in the city of Liverpool. But what I find really funny, we'll never know the true answer to this, as people saw that as a sign of like people had these fireworks ready to go for when England lost, whereas, and that's a great story that fits into the We Hate England stuff, but in reality they'd have set those fireworks off if England won, because you don't buy fireworks to not set them off.
Well, yeah, exactly.
No fireworks for those kids.
They've won. They've won.
Pouring a bucket of fucking water over the box of fireworks. Yeah, funny. Thank you so much, everyone who's joined us for the podcast. Far more fun and serious at the same time than I probably expected from our first of pre-season, but there you go. As mentioned, we'll be back for those pre-season games doing watch-alongs. We've also got some incredible content for you guys to keep you entertained in the meantime, streaming on our Liverpool streaming service, theredmentv.com. Full interviews with Trent Alexander-Arnold, Jürgen Klopp, and of course the three-part docu-series Jordan Henderson 10 Years at Red, which is the best thing that any fan media has ever produced. If you don't believe us, just check it out, honestly, you won't regret it. We've got a little bit from the Trent Alexander-Arnold thing coming up for you guys in a second. And also, don't forget, if you want more transfer insight, I sat down with Neil Jones from goal.com last week to talk about who Liverpool are likely to move on this summer. Really interesting chat, but yeah, check it out. Have a little explore and let us know you get on in the comments. And we'll be back with another Red Men podcast next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.